All right, so now I want to talk to you about conversational hypnosis. So in this section, we're going to dig deep into which techniques you should use if you don't want to put someone into a trance. I'm going to teach you how to bypass someone's critical mind covertly, so you can still plant subconscious suggestions and use mental programming to influence people's thoughts and behaviors. But before I get to all that, I really want to drill into your head the idea that all of us as humans are the same. We're all the same in the context of we can all be influenced through psychological techniques. For example, if I say, don't think of a black cat, you immediately picture a black cat because of the embedded command, think of a black cat. And as well as that, you have to make the mental image of a black cat in your mind for you to understand the information. And this is exactly how you can use the power of suggestion to get people to do what you want, when you want. And by understanding how this whole process works, you'll be able to protect yourself from anyone who's trying to influence you or trying to manipulate you. Okay, so the first understanding I want you to get to grips with is that the human mind works like programming a computer. So when you feed information into a computer, the computer acts on it, and it doesn't even matter if the information fed into the computer is wrong. The computer will still act on it. And it's the exact same thing with the human mind. What the mind believes, the subconscious will act on. So if a person believes something which is not true, the subconscious mind will not correct the error, but instead it will act on it. And so whatever you can make a person believe actually becomes their reality. Now, the most effective way to change a person's beliefs is to bypass their conscious thinking and to talk directly to the subconscious mind. And the easiest way to do that is to distract the conscious mind, and that will stop conscious thinking. And this will produce a state of mind which is very similar to daydreaming. For example, how many times have you been sitting there watching TV and you just completely zone out? And you get drawn into whatever it is you're watching, and you lose all sense of time and place. Well, the reason this happens is because you've stopped thinking consciously, and you are, in effect, in a hypnotic trance. And I'm willing to bet that this hypnotic state of mind has happened to you while you're watching TV on more than one occasion, because watching TV naturally puts us into an altered state of consciousness. And you won't even have been aware of it, but even though the TV screen appears static, it actually flickers, and any repeating pattern can induce a hypnotic state. And aside from that, if you're watching a movie or some kind of TV show, then the story itself can actually induce a hypnotic trance, because when we listen to stories, we automatically begin on some level to put ourselves in the story and see the story as if it's you in the story, because that's just the way we work. And it's the same thing as don't think of a black cat. Because you have to imagine a black cat to process the information. And when you tell a story about something you did or something that happened to you, you put the person into a trance, and it's almost impossible for them not to place themselves in the story as they imagine it. So for example, last Tuesday, I was running to the train station because I was late for my train. And as I was running, I heard someone shouting behind me. So I turned around, and there was this man chasing me up the street. And before I could work out why he was chasing me, I turned around, and just as I turned around, I slipped on a banana skin. And as I fell to the ground, my suitcase went flying through the air. And as it hit the floor, the case popped open, and all this money started falling out. So I figured that must have been why the guy was chasing me. Anyway, I picked myself up, grabbed as much money as I could from the case, and carried on running for the train station, because I really didn't want to miss this train. Then, as I got to the train station, I still didn't have a ticket, and there was this huge crowd of people there waiting to get tickets, and I knew I wouldn't have time to buy one. And then I saw someone dressed as a gorilla, and he was standing there holding a ticket in his hands. So I ran up to the guy, and I offered him all of the money I was holding on to for his ticket. But he told me all he wanted was the banana skin that was stuck to my shoe. So I handed him the banana skin, and he gave me the ticket. And finally, I made my train. And after that, I still had enough money to take all of my friends out for lunch. Okay, now, even though I'm not there with you, I know that on some level, you had to imagine yourself in this story in order for you to understand the information I was telling you. And it's in these states of mind where someone is most receptive to mental programming, so you can subtly influence a person to make choices without them being aware of it. And if someone doesn't know what you're doing, then it makes them even more suggestible. Now, when it comes to conversational hypnosis, we talk a lot about using suggestions and giving suggestions. And as an example of suggestion, let's take this imagined scenario of Irene and Bill. Irene wants Bill to take out the trash. Now, as soon as she says, "Bill, can you take out the trash, please?" Bill's critical mind jumps into action, and the information is analyzed, and Bill makes a decision as to whether or not he's going to take out the trash. Now, Bill's critical mind might make the decision that he loves his wife, and he wants to make her happy, so he decides to take out the trash. And that's an example of the critical mind finding reasons to accept the suggestion, which ultimately leads to Bill taking out the trash. But looking at the suggestion of taking out the trash another way, maybe Bill and Irene had a huge argument this morning about Bill leaving the toilet seat up again or not cleaning the dishes the night before. So Bill's critical mind doesn't really feel like accepting the suggestion of taking out the trash. So he chooses to ignore Irene and leaves the trash where it is. So Bill's critical mind has rejected the suggestion of taking out the trash. So that's an example of how the critical mind will either choose to accept or reject a suggestion. And the critical mind makes a decision whether or not to accept or reject a suggestion based on the individual's own morals and beliefs. Now, this example of Irene and Bill is just one example of ineffective communication, which leads to, first of all, not getting the desired result, and secondly, most likely, a troubled relationship. So what if instead of this ineffective way of communicating with people, you could insidiously massage certain ideas and mental states into people without ever mentioning what it is you want them to do. So when the time comes, they will just spontaneously, of their own free will, decide to do whatever it is you want them to do. So with that in mind, I want to introduce you to PWA, or Perception Without Awareness, and how it can be used to influence real behavior. So what is perception without awareness? Well, I'm willing to bet there must have been some time in your life when someone you know, or maybe even someone who you passed on the street, was whistling a tune or singing a song, and maybe at the time you weren't even aware that they were doing it, but then an hour or so later in the day, you find yourself whistling or singing that same tune, and you don't even know why. Well, that's perception without awareness. But when perception without awareness becomes really powerful, we're able to influence people's behavior in everyday, ordinary situations, and that's exactly what we're about to get into now. So we've already talked about suggestions, but when you're giving suggestions in conversational hypnosis, the real challenge comes in making sure that the suggestion bypasses the critical factor and goes directly to the subconscious, because once the suggestion reaches the subconscious mind, the person will then act on the suggestion without challenging it. So the secret to making this work is to make sure that the conscious mind isn't aware there's a suggestion in the first place, but at the same time, making sure that the suggestion is recognizable enough for the subconscious to actually pick it up. Okay, so right now I'm going to give you all the tools you need to be able to direct the suggestion right to the subconscious mind, and the first one is called embedded commands. Embedded commands are also known as analog marking, and the reason for that is because when we use an embedded command, what you're really doing is marking out a word or a few words in a sentence so that a person's subconscious mind will automatically pay special attention to them. So going back to the example of Bill and Irene. Irene wants Bill to take out the trash. So what she needs to do is feed Bill's subconscious the message, "Take out trash." And one way to do this is by using embedded commands. One thing I should point out is that embedded commands are usually between about 1 and 4 words long for them to be most effective. You can use longer embedded commands, as you will see me do in some examples coming up, but the most effective way to use them is trying to keep them short. So that's just between 1 and 4 words long. Okay, so let's take, for example, the embedded command, "Take out trash." How are we going to mark it out so that the subconscious mind knows to pay attention to it? Well, there are a few ways in which you can make an embedded command stand out. One way is to say the embedded command slightly louder in the rest of the sentence. Another way is to pause just for a second before you say the embedded command. And another way is to do some kind of physical gesture, like some kind of hand movement or tapping on a glass with your fingers or tapping on the table with a pen or a unique kind of stare or some kind of look with your eyes. But one thing I will say is when you're using analog marking, you need to be careful to not make it too obvious what you're doing. There does need to be a distinct difference, but only enough so that the subconscious mind picks up on it and not the conscious mind. But you'll get the hang of it with a bit of experimentation and a bit of practice. Okay, before I give you an example of using embedded commands, I want to quickly talk about the concept of phonetic ambiguity. Basically, phonetic ambiguity means that when we're using embedded commands and analog marking, we can use words which sound like something else. So, for example, have you been outside tonight? Really, I'm saying the word been, but because of phonetic ambiguity, it sounds like I'm saying the word been. Okay, so here's an example of using embedded commands with analog marking and phonetic ambiguity. And I just want to point out that this will not affect you because you know exactly what I'm doing and you're looking at it with a critical mind. So don't worry, you won't end up with an overwhelming desire to empty your bins or anything like that. So let's say, for example, it's Tuesday night and Irene has just got back from work and Bill's sitting there on the couch and Irene really wants Bill to take out the trash. Now let's say this same scenario happens every week and Bill never wants to do it, so it always ends up being Irene's job. Well, not this week, because Irene has taken this course, so she has a different plan of attack. So instead of going through the same scenario as every other week, this time Irene comes through the door in a positive mood, goes over to Bill and sits on his lap and puts her arms around him. Now she doesn't usually do this, so she's already interrupted Bill's pattern of watching TV and placed him in a suggestible state of mind. And then Irene says to Bill, "Honey, have you been outside tonight? There's such a nice sunset out there, and it reminds me of going camping by the lake when I was a kid. Didn't you love that, when you would plan a camping trip and it seemed like it would take forever to come? But when the morning came when you were getting ready to go camping, and you were so excited that you want to help and take the bags out to the car because you've been waiting for this camping trip for so long." Now that was just a short example for you, and obviously I slowed it down and I made those embedded commands really obvious for you. But let's say that after this scenario, Bill then goes on to talk about how much he loved going fishing with his dad as a kid. Then after a while, the conversation dies down and Irene says to Bill, "You know, I'm in a good mood tonight. So what do you prefer? Do you want me to cook for you tonight, or do you want that takeout rubbish you love so much, like Chinese or pizza?" Then let's say Bill wants the Chinese, so Irene orders the Chinese, and while she's ordering, she steps outside to look at the sunset. When she comes back in, she says to Bill, "Have you been outside now? It's so nice out there." Then an hour later, Bill goes into the fridge to get a beer, and while he's in the kitchen, Irene shouts over to him and says, "Honey, can you take the bin bags out of the cabinet and bring me one here so I can put all this takeout trash in there because I think the bin's full already." Now with all those embedded commands, Irene is confident that tonight will be Bill's night to take out the trash. And guess what? After a few minutes, Bill comes back into the room holding a bin bag, kisses Irene on the cheek and says, "Don't worry, honey, I'll empty the bins." So let's break down what just took place between Bill and Irene. One of the main things that Irene did was interrupt Bill's usual pattern of behavior. And by doing that, she threw Bill off balance mentally, so it made her job of influencing much easier. By interrupting someone's usual pattern of behavior, you send them into a state of mind where they're most receptive to mental programming. So Irene was using analog marking like we talked about by pausing slightly before the embedded command and then saying the command slightly louder than the rest of the sentence. But with that in mind, don't forget, like I said earlier, Irene could have marked off the embedded commands by using a unique stare or a gesture like tapping on the glass. So when she says, "Been outside tonight," she taps on the glass. And when she says, "Take the bags out," she taps on the glass. So you get the idea. Anyway, the point is, Bill had no idea what was going on. I mean, just look at these suggestions that Bill had coming his way in the space of 1 or 2 hours. "Been outside tonight," "You want to help," "Take the bags out," "You bin," "Take out rubbish," "Been outside tonight," "Take the bin bags out," "Take out trash." And because of all these suggestions coming his way, Bill gets the idea of taking out the trash in his head right from the start, and it's almost like he can see himself doing it, but he just doesn't know he's seeing himself doing it. Then by the time the final suggestion comes along with the comment about the bin being full, Bill decides to take out the trash because it feels right. And that's exactly what I mean when I say about insidiously massaging certain ideas and mental states into people without ever mentioning what it is you want them to do. So when the time comes, they will just spontaneously, of their own free will, decide to do whatever it is you want them to do because it feels right for them. And with that in mind, when it comes to the suggestions that you want to give someone, they can be in the form of printed words, pictures, or by speaking to them. But as we've talked about, the idea is to deliver these suggestions in a way that's completely under the radar, completely covert, so people are not even aware that they've seen or heard anything. And the reason why this works so well is because when a suggestion is not clearly distinguishable consciously, people cannot make the conscious choice to accept or reject it. And when a person cannot make that choice, or when the choice is taken away from them, then the suggestion is programmed to their subconscious without them even being aware of it. So the subconscious mind will act on it. And just this one thing I've shown you so far is a pure example of how easy we all are to manipulate. And while we're on the subject, one thing I have a lot of questions about is, can you use embedded commands on somebody while they're asleep? And the answer is yes. The words will still go directly to the subconscious mind. So if Irene wants to take advantage of this fact, then she can continue to program Bill's mind while he's sleeping. Okay, the next tool I want to introduce you to is called suggestive predicates. And what they do is give you a sneaky way to embed your commands into sentences so that the people you're talking to have no conscious awareness of what you're doing, and it seems like a normal conversation. But the subconscious mind responds to those embedded commands automatically. So let's go back to the example of Bill and Irene. When Irene says to Bill, "Have you been outside tonight?" then the suggestive predicate is "Have you?" and then it's followed by the embedded command, "Been outside tonight." Or as another example, "Can you take the bin bags out the cabinet?" The suggestive predicate is "Can you?" and then that's followed by the embedded command, "Take the bin bags out the cabinet." And I want you to understand that suggestive predicates can be used in any normal conversation when you're looking to set up the structure of the conversation for embedded commands. Now, if you refer to your downloadable PDF workbook that comes with this section of the course, you'll see there's a full list of suggestive predicates. And it's a pretty big list, but by no means do you have to stick to the list. Just understand that all suggestive predicates on the list are examples that you can use if you want to, but you don't have to. And when I'm using embedded commands in my everyday language and my normal conversations, I don't even think about suggestive predicates. I just make them up on the fly. I just use whatever phrase or sentence I need to use so that I can set up the structure of my communication so that it seems natural and it seems like the kind of conversation that I would normally have, and I can easily embed my command into it. So for example, have a look at this sentence that Irene said to Bill. "When the morning came when you were going camping and you were so excited that you want to help and take the bags out to the car because you've been waiting for that holiday for ages." So the suggestive predicate in that sentence was, "You were so excited that," and then the embedded command, "You want to help." Okay, so let's have a look at another example when Irene said to Bill, "Do you want me to cook tonight, or do you want that takeout rubbish you love so much?" So the suggestive predicate was, "Do you want that?" And then after that suggestive predicate, we've got the embedded command, "Takeout rubbish." And finally, the last example, Irene says to Bill, "So I can put all this takeout trash in there." So the suggestive predicate was obviously, "So I can put all this," and then followed by the embedded command, "Take out trash," in there. So there you have it. That's suggestive predicates, and I think it's good to understand what they are, but at the same time, don't be afraid to move away from the list and come up with your own, because I think that's when this stuff becomes really powerful, when you can just talk like you're having a normal conversation and you can embed commands naturally. Now, obviously, with the list of suggestive predicates, I don't expect you to remember them all, but just go through the list and choose a few which feel the most natural for you, and then commit them to memory so you can start using them and just get a feel for them and get an idea of what they're all about. Alright, so far, I've given you two tools that you can start using to influence, direct, and control someone's thinking. But next up, I want to talk about something which is in line with embedded commands and suggestive predicates, and that thing is called states of mind. So when I'm talking about states of mind, I want you to understand that whenever anybody does just about anything, the only reason they're doing it is because they have accessed a certain state of mind. So for example, If a woman finds herself feeling attracted to a man, then she's accessed a certain state. Or if you meet someone and you start telling yourself that you don't really like this person, then again, you've accessed a certain state of mind. And the one thing you need to understand so that you can influence, control, and direct someone's thinking is that states are processes which take place inside your mind and your body. And if you can make someone access a certain state, then you can make them do just about anything. And the fact of the matter is, any state that you can think of, you can create inside another person, because it's just a process that people do to themselves. So if you can imagine yourself, all alone, standing in a crowded bar, and you can hear the music in the background, and as you're standing by the bar, and you begin to look around, trying to see if you can find anyone you know, it's then that you see a beautiful woman, about 25 years old. She has long blonde hair that touches the skin of her back. She's wearing a strapless red silk dress that hugs her perfect figure, and she's holding a glass of champagne. She's laughing and smiling at the group of men who surround her, and then she turns around and she looks at you. Your eyes meet across the room, and as your eyes meet across the room, she stops listening to the group of men surrounding her, and all her focus is on you. You look back at her, wondering why this beautiful woman is so fascinated by you. And as you do that, you start to notice she's slowly walking towards you through the crowds of people. And as she gets closer to you, you feel your heart start to beat faster. She's even closer now as your breathing starts to deepen. And as you do that, your heart beats even faster. And you're starting to feel hot. And as you're starting to feel hot, you realize how nervous you're starting to feel. And as she gets even closer, you start to worry about what you're going to say to her. She's so beautiful with soft skin and full, soft lips. Okay, so I'm going to stop there, but you get the idea. So when I describe what it's like to see that attractive woman at the bar, even though I'm not there with you right now, I'm willing to bet that to some extent you access that state of how you feel when you see a beautiful woman. And all that nervousness you would feel if she suddenly approached you, well, I'm willing to bet you felt that right then in that moment. And just like I told you before with the story about me running to catch the train and then the money falling out when I slip on the banana skin, we have to access states and recall the feelings associated with that state to understand the information. And you can do that with any state you want. All you need to do is describe the process and a person will recall the feelings associated with it and fall into that state. So if you want a person to forget a piece of information, or if you want a person to feel those feelings they feel when they fall in love, or if you want a person to forget about their ex-boyfriend, or anything else you can think of, then as long as that person has experienced that state once before, then they can experience it again with you anytime you want. And then you can anchor that state yourself, but anchoring is something we haven't really talked about yet, but we will get onto that in just a minute. And another thing that helps when you're trying to get someone to access states is if you do something called going first. What going first basically means is when you want a person to access a certain state, then you need to go first and experience those feelings and access that state as you're describing it. And it's the exact same thing an actor has to do when he's acting. An actor doesn't just get up on stage or in front of a camera and start speaking a bunch of lines which have absolutely no feeling behind them. He's up there on that stage doing the famous Romeo and Juliet scene, and he's right there in the moment. He's accessed that state of love and lust for Juliet, and he has to. If he didn't, then the audience would probably not believe his performance, and they would get up and leave. If he got up on that stage and just spoke the words, "But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief, that thou her maid art far more fair than she," then no one's going to want to see that. But if he accesses the state, and he feels those feelings, and he goes first, then you get something a little bit more like this. "But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief, that thou her maid art far more fair than she." So that's what you need to do when you're trying to make someone access a certain state. You need to go first. And by going first, you give your audience permission to follow you into that state so they can feel those feelings along with you. And to make those states even stronger, you need to really activate a person's imagination by using different sensory modalities. Because the fact is that people are conditioned to respond to multiple modalities. So this means that your subjects are naturally conditioned to be more responsive when you can get them to imagine seeing what they could see, hearing what they could hear, and feeling what they could feel. And when you communicate with someone using visual, kinesthetic, and auditory modalities, it makes this whole process of persuading someone a lot more effective because you're making them access different parts of their brain. So with this in mind, when you're describing a state that you want someone to experience, then as I said earlier, you need to go first. And that also means that you need to see it, hear it, and feel it. So let's take the woman in the red dress example. So if you can imagine yourself all alone, standing in a crowded bar, you can hear the music in the background. And as you're standing by the bar, and you begin to look around, trying to see if you can find anyone you know, then you see a beautiful woman, about 25 years old. She has long blonde hair that touches the skin of her back, and she's wearing a strapless red silk dress that hugs her perfect figure. And she's holding a glass of champagne. She's there, and she's laughing, she's smiling at the group of men who surround her. And then she turns around to look at you. Your eyes meet across the room. And as your eyes meet across the room, she stops listening to the group of men surrounding her, and she focuses on you. You look back at her, wondering why this beautiful woman is so fascinated by you. And as you do that, you start to notice she's slowly walking towards you through the crowds of people. As she gets closer, you feel your heart start to beat faster. She's even closer now as your breathing starts to deepen. And as you do that, your heart beats even faster. And you're starting to feel hot. When you're starting to feel hot, you realize how nervous you're starting to feel. As she gets even closer, you start to worry about what you're going to say to her. She's so beautiful with soft skin and full, soft lips. Alright, so let's take a look at that description again. So I said, you can hear the music in the background. You see a beautiful woman. You feel your heart start to beat faster. You're starting to feel hot. You realize how nervous you're starting to feel. So as you can see, I'm using all the sensory modalities, and it makes it even easier for you to access that state that I want you to access. Okay, so by now, I think you get the idea of how to get someone to access a certain state. All you need to do is describe the state while going first and entering that state yourself, and at the same time using sensory-rich details. So I'm pretty confident that you know how to do that right now. So by now you should have three tools under your belt. We've got the embedded commands, the suggestive predicates, and now the states of mind. So what I'm going to do for you is, just before we move on to the next section, is to give you an example of how we can use all three of these tools together. So here it goes. So first of all, I would say, have you ever been in love before? And then the woman would say, yeah, sure, I've been in love a few times. And then I would follow up and say, well, you know, I was reading this magazine article the other day, but I think love is an amazing thing. And when you really do fall in love, it kind of tears your heart from your chest, and it makes you feel really vulnerable. You feel like you can't eat and you can't sleep, and you wait by the phone all day long, and you find yourself thinking about this person all day long, and then you bring up their name in conversations any chance that you have, because it feels good to talk about this person, and it feels good to think about this person all day long. And it's almost like there's a voice in your head that tells you you're falling in love with this person. And every now and then, maybe you secretly look at them and you feel this excitement. And that excitement just builds, and it's like you kind of feel this nervousness like butterflies in your stomach. And the more you look at this person, the more you imagine how amazing it would be to be with them. And maybe you go home at night and you're laying there in your bed and you're thinking about them. And maybe you even picture this person in your mind. And as you do that, you start to think about everything it is you like about this person. And you're picturing them, having fun with them, and you imagine all the things about them, and maybe even think about how good they smell, and you think about how good it feels to touch them, and then you imagine kissing this person, and then you get that warm feeling right there in your stomach, and that's when you know you're really in love with this person. Have you ever felt like that before? Okay, so on to the next tool I want to give you. And I know you've heard me mention this tool a few times, and it's called anchoring. And a good way for me to get you to understand exactly what anchoring is to talk to you about the Russian scientist Ivan Pavlov, who experimented with the effects of conditioned reflexes. Basically, in Pavlov's experiments, he rang a bell, gave a dog some food, and as soon as the dog saw and smelled the food, the dog would start salivating. Then after a few times of repeating the whole process of ringing the bell, letting the dog see and smell the food, and then watching as the dog would salivate, Pavlov eliminated the offering of the food from the process, so he would only be ringing the bell with no offering of the food. Then, even though Pavlov stopped offering the food to the dogs, the ringing of the bell was still enough to lead the dogs to salivate. And the reason why is because by using the process of ringing the bell and then offering the dogs food, Pavlov had created conditioned reflexes in the dogs, which led the dogs to salivate. Now, the reason why I'm telling you all about this experiment is because the same conditioned response can be created in any person you meet, and we call this anchoring. So let's say you've taken the time to build a state in a person. So now, why not use this sneaky little tactic of anchors to make sure that you can put that person back in state anytime you want without having to go through the whole process of building the state all over again. So when you're using anchoring, what you're really doing is stealing an emotion, stealing a response, and then implanting a trigger. And anyone who works in the advertising industry is a master of persuasion, and they know all about anchors. They know exactly what to do to covertly weave their images and slogans into our minds, knowing that we'll register so much unconsciously that our conscious mind will have no idea what's going on. Then, when we walk into a store and we see their product, we feel good about that product, and we think we've never even heard of it. And this is anchoring at its best, and we all fall for it. Now, just to give you an idea of how powerful anchoring is, I would say that it's easily one of the most powerful skills that you will ever learn. And with anchoring, you want to get to a place where it just becomes second nature to you. So how does anchoring work, and how can we use it to our advantage to influence, to control, and to direct someone's behavior? Well, let me ask you this question. Have you ever been listening to the radio, and a certain song comes on, and as soon as you hear that piece of music, you're taken back to the first time you heard that song, and you immediately feel the emotions you were feeling when you heard it? For example, maybe you hear a certain love song on the radio, and it immediately makes you think of a girlfriend or a boyfriend that you had in college, and how crazy in love you were back then. Well, this is anchoring at work. That event in time is anchored to that piece of music. And the reason why it works is because we all naturally attach associations to things such as songs, smells, sounds, gestures, objects, faces, tones of voice, and we can use this fact to our advantage, and that's what this section is all about. So the way this works is if we can get a person into a particular state, then combine that state with a touch or a sound or a physical gesture, then the person's brain will automatically associate that state with that touch, sound, or gesture. So later on when you do that same touch, sound, or gesture, the person will go straight back into that previous state. So as an example, let's say you've asked a person to remember a time when they were feeling totally confident, totally sure of themselves, that they could do anything, and you ask them to describe that feeling. And then when you can see that they're inside their heads and they're feeling those feelings and they've really accessed that state, it's at that point that you can use an anchor. And then, the next time you use that anchor, they will go straight back into that state. So you could touch them on the shoulder, and at the same time you could say, "It feels good, doesn't it?" And the person will automatically associate those feelings with you and to the touch you just gave them. And the really sneaky thing is, the link between the feelings they're experiencing and the touch you just gave them, and your words, "It feels good, doesn't it?" has been instantly made. You've just created an anchor for those feelings, so there's nothing they can do but feel those feelings every time you touch their shoulder and you say the words, "It feels good, doesn't it?" Okay, so here's what you need to do to anchor a response. First of all, you need to be in rapport with the person, and we've already covered how to do that, so hopefully by now you're all set. Step two is you need to elicit a desired feeling, a desired response, or a desired state of mind from the person that you want to influence. And you can do that by using the tools we've been talking about, which are embedded commands, suggestive predicates, and going first while describing a state of mind. The next step is once you see that your subject has accessed the state that you want them to be in, then you need to anchor that state with some kind of gesture, touch, sound, or word combination. So an example of two of them could be, as you see someone has entered a particular state, you could reach over, put your hand on their shoulder, and say the words, "It feels good, doesn't it?" So by doing that, you're combining the two anchors of touch and words. The touch of their shoulder and the words, "It feels good, doesn't it?" Then step four is you want to repeat this anchor a few times whilst you're interacting with them to enhance the association and to make that anchor even stronger. Step five is that after you've repeated the anchor a few times, so they have a pretty good strong association with it, you can now use the anchor to trigger off that desired feeling, that desired response, or that desired state by using that same touch and word combination whenever you want. Now, for the person to associate all those feelings to the anchor, you need to use the anchor at least three times, and the anchor always needs to be in the same place with the same amount of pressure. But of course, the anchor doesn't have to be just touch. A lot of times, when I use anchors, I will just make a particular face or a unique stare. But one thing I do need to point out is that you shouldn't overuse the anchor, or it will stop working. So imagine Pavlov ringing the bell 10 times without offering the dog any food, then the anchor will be rendered useless. Another thing is, of course, the anchor needs to be seen, felt, or heard by the person. If they're not aware you're doing anything, then this will not work. But at the same time, you don't want to make it too obvious. Of course, it needs to be obvious enough for the subconscious to be aware of it, but try to avoid making the person consciously aware of it. The way I always think of it is it's like it's a part of the conversation, as if the anchor you're using serves to illustrate a point, and that way no one becomes aware that you're doing anything sneaky. So by now, hopefully, you have a pretty good understanding of what anchoring is and how to use it. But just to really make sure you get the idea, let me give you an example from my own life that will hopefully let you see just how easy it is to anchor someone into a particular state. Okay, so years ago when I was first learning this stuff, I was around a friend of mine, Mike's house, and it was Friday night. We just got off work and, you know, we were two young guys, both single at the time. So it being Friday night, I was looking forward to going out and to socialize. But for some reason, Mike didn't want to go out. And he wanted to stay in, have a few beers, watch a movie, and I knew he was the kind of guy that when he says he doesn't want to go out, then he means he really doesn't want to go out. So, as I said, I was just starting to learn this stuff, and I'd used anchoring a few times. I had some success, and so I thought I would try it out with Mike, and try and bend his mind around to the idea of us going out and meeting some new people and having some fun. So I started talking to him about some of the crazy nights we've had, when we've just gone out there, had some beers, met a bunch of people, and just ended up in some of the strangest places or at some of the craziest parties. And then after talking for a while, we were laughing, we were joking, and then I looked over at him and I said, "The VIP party." Now you should know that the VIP party was probably one of the craziest nights of my life, and Mike was one of the guys who was there for that night. So I started describing everything that happened on the night of the VIP party. And I was describing the night, and I could see that he was entering that state of having fun, feeling social, getting out there and enjoying life. Because as you know, the only way Mike could understand the information that I was giving him was if he was fully reliving it in his mind, if he was fully reliving that night again. So as I was describing that night, I could see that he was getting more and more excited. He had a big smile on his face, he was laughing, and when I could see that he was really getting into that state, I started drumming my fingers on the beer bottle, and then, as the story was getting to a climax, and I was bringing his state to a peak, I was drumming even louder with my fingers on the beer bottle, and then I stopped, and I changed the subject to something completely different. Now, why did I change the subject to something completely different? Well, in hypnosis, there's a technique called fractionation, and basically, what it means is, if you put someone into a trance, and then you bring them out, and then you put them back into that trance, and they go even deeper the second time. So I was using this fractionation, and I wanted Mike to go even deeper into the state of having fun, feeling social, and getting out there and enjoying life. So after I changed the subject, and I talked about something completely different for a few minutes, I started directing him back into that state that I wanted him to be in. And after a few more minutes, I could see that his state was reaching its peak again. So again, I started drumming my fingers on the beer bottle, and I could see he was definitely even deeper into that state than the first time. Then again, I stopped the conversation,
and then I started walking out of the room to get another beer from the fridge. And then, as I was walking back into the room, I had the beer in my hand. I started drumming my fingers again on the beer bottle, and I could see his face light up. I said to Mike, "You know, we should really think about going out tonight." And as I said that, he jumped off the couch, started putting on his shoes, and we went out that night. And as I said, that was years ago, and Mike still has no idea how I got him to go out that night. Another way you can use anchoring is to enhance your attractiveness to members of the opposite sex. And this technique I'm about to share with you is all about anchoring a feeling to an object. So in this example, I was at a restaurant, and it was after hours, and I was waiting for a friend of mine who was the owner of the restaurant at the time. And I was waiting there, and one of the waitresses came to the front of the restaurant where I was seated, and she was just getting her things together before she could go home. And she had waited on us a couple of times throughout the evening, and I felt that we'd already had a pretty good rapport going. So after a few minutes, I said to her something like, "You know those two ladies that were sitting at my table tonight?" And then the waitress replied and said, yes, she saw them, but she didn't know who they were. And then I continued and said, "Well, they got us onto the conversation topic of when they meet a guy and they really like him, then they just get this feeling right away that lets them know, you really want to be with this guy." And I was saying that for women, I always thought it takes them some time before they know that they like a guy. But for a guy, I always felt like he knows right away, as soon as he sees the girl, that he likes that girl. And then the waitress said, "No, I don't know. I've met a few guys who I like right from the start." So then I replied with, "Okay, so when you're really attracted to someone, how do you know? In other words, what signals do you get from yourself inside that let you know you're really attracted to this guy?" Now, the reason why I asked her, first of all, what signals does she get from herself inside that lets her know that she's really attracted to this guy, was first of all, so that she would have to go inside, access the state of attraction, and then feel those feelings while she was in my presence, and then associate those feelings with me. And the second reason was because the words, "you're really attracted to this guy," also acted as an embedded command. So then after that, she replied with something like, "Well, I guess I get this kind of nervous feeling, this kind of butterflies feeling down here in my stomach." And then as she said that, I reached over the bar with my hand and mimed scooping up those feelings, and then raised my hand upwards to about the level of her heart. And as I did that, I said, "And I bet the more attracted you become, the more those butterflies rise up from your stomach until your face begins to flush like it is right now." And then I said, "And it's so much better when you can feel that sense of attraction right away for someone." And as I said that, I pointed to myself in a way that would suggest to her subconscious that I was that someone. And then I said, "So I'll tell you what, why don't you take all of those good feelings you're having right now and put them into this chocolate so you can carry them around with you all day tomorrow?" So that was called condiment anchoring. Another type of anchoring is called a sliding anchor. And the way that this works is so that you've elicited a feeling of attraction from your target, and you've anchored that feeling to their wrist just above their hand. Then as you continue describing the feeling of attraction and taking them even deeper into that state, you can use a sliding anchor and increase the intensity of those feelings by first of all firing off the anchor, and then instead of removing your hand from their wrist, as you trigger the anchor, you can slide your hand up their arm towards the shoulder as you say the words, and as you feel that feeling growing even stronger. So you're sliding your hand up their arm as you're saying that. And then you continue taking them even deeper into that state. Then after a few more minutes, you can repeat that sliding anchor again. Then again, their state and those feelings will grow even stronger as you slide the anchor up their arm and you say, and as you feel that feeling growing even stronger. One more thing to point out is that, in my opinion, I would save sliding anchors for a member of the opposite sex, because this is something which I feel is very seductive. The sliding anchor, of course, first of all, you're using touch on somebody else's arm, so you wouldn't want to use a sliding anchor on, say, for instance, your boss, if you're going in there and you're trying to anchor him in some kind of way. Another way you could use anchoring is, let's say every time you're talking to a member of the opposite sex or anyone you want to make a good impression with, then every time you're talking to them and you see they're having a good time and they're smiling and they're laughing, and you can anchor that state by touching them on the shoulder and saying something like, "It feels good, doesn't it?" So let's say you're there with your boss and you're laughing and you're joking. And when you see his state reach a peak, you probably wouldn't want to anchor him while saying, "It feels good, doesn't it?" Because it wouldn't make any sense. It would be out of context. But instead, what you could do is, let's say you just made a joke where you told a funny story and he's there, he's laughing. And you reach over there, grab him on the shoulder and say, "You know what I mean?" Or you could say, "You know what I'm saying?" Or, "It's funny stuff, huh?" And it can pretty much be anything. These are just examples. So you can just say whatever feels most natural to you. And that's all it takes. Now, as the conversation progresses and a few more jokes get passed back and forth, you can just stack those anchors so that you've got at least three, and then you'll be able to trigger that state of having fun and laughing anytime he's around you. Or let's say when you're talking to a member of the opposite sex, well, you can do the exact same thing. Anytime when they're in a positive state, then you can anchor it, and once you really get to grips with this idea of anchoring, you'll be able to plant different anchors to different feelings all over their body. So you can have an anchor for laughter on her shoulder, an anchor for attraction on her hand, an anchor for feeling a connection on her solar plexus. If you can think of it, you can anchor it. And once you really feel confident with using anchors, what about using an anchor when you're making love? So let's say your partner is just about to reach an orgasm. What about anchoring that feeling by whispering in her ear as she's about to climax? By whispering something like, "Come for me, baby," or, "That's it, enjoy that feeling." Then after you repeat that anchor a few times on a few different occasions, you better whisper those same words in her ear, and you'll see an immediate response as they enter that state and have a feeling of passion running through their body. One thing I will mention here is, now you're aware of what an anchor is and how an anchor works, you need to be aware of negative anchors, and most of the time you want to avoid them like the plague. So a negative anchor is something that people do, and most of the time they have no idea they're doing it. And it's basically when you accidentally attach a negative anchor to either yourself or someone else or something else without meaning to do it. Now, one example I can give you from my own life is, years ago, before I had any idea what an anchor was, I had a girlfriend at the time. And when we were first together, I introduced her to a band that I really liked. And for a long time, she would listen to them, and she really enjoyed listening to the music. Then, after a while, I realized that she never put their CD on anymore. And any time when I put it on, she would immediately get into a depressed mood, and she would seem to start arguments with me for no reason. And it's only now, looking back, after I've learned this stuff, that I understand anchors and negative anchors, and I realize exactly why she would enter that depressed state whenever I would put the CD on. And the reason why is because throughout that relationship, whenever we would have an argument or something wasn't going well in the relationship, I would put on the CD because for me, the music was deeply anchored to good times and fun, so it put me in a better mood. But for her, she hadn't known the band as long as I had, and because I put the music on whenever we'd had an argument, so she was in a negative state due to that argument, then after a while, I'd accidentally created a negative anchor to the music for her, even though I had no idea that I was doing it. So that's just one example of negative anchors. And as I said, most of the time, you want to avoid negative anchors, but sometimes you might want to use them to your advantage. Okay, so on to the next section. So far I've given you embedded commands, suggestive predicates, states of minds, and anchors. So right now we're going to get into two techniques called quoting and stacking realities. So quoting and stacking realities are all about using quotes during normal conversations. Quoting and stacking realities is all about using quotes during normal conversations to mask your embedded commands and to describe states of mind. And the whole idea is that when we're using embedded commands or describing states, sometimes it can be useful to tell your subject that we're actually quoting someone else. So the way quoting works is we're saying something through someone else's mouth. So we can say something like, "I was talking to a good friend of mine, and she was telling me about when she meets someone, and she feels like she can feel really comfortable talking to him, even though she's only just met him." And the reason why this is so powerful is because when you're having a conversation and you use the words, "my friend was telling me," a person's critical factor completely shuts off, because it has no reason to be on guard, because we're talking about something somebody else told you, so it's not something you're saying. So by using quotes, we can still give someone a direct suggestion using embedded commands, and we can easily put someone into a certain state by describing that process as if someone has described it that way to us. And you don't just have to quote a friend, you could also quote a magazine article, a TV show, a seminar, a book, or anything else you can think of. So just as easily as we can say, I was talking to a friend and she was telling me that when she meets someone she really likes, she can feel really comfortable talking to him even if she's only just met him. We can also say, I was reading an article in this magazine and it was saying that women meet people and they can feel really comfortable talking to them even if they've only just met them. But as I said, when using quotes, you can quote anything you can think of, a friend, a book, a magazine, or anything else you want. So aside from the fact that quoting is a good way to bypass someone's critical factor, why else might you want to start using quotes? Well, how about the fact that by using quotes, it can make a person feel more at ease with the content you're about to deliver, and because of that, they will be more receptive to your suggestions, due to the fact that you're talking about something that either someone else told you, or something that you read, or something that you heard somewhere. Okay, so that's quotes. Now, a more advanced version of quotes is stacking realities. Stacking realities is all about using quotes, but at the same time, bringing in many different people and many different sources of information, such as a book, a magazine, a seminar, radio, or a TV show, and each person or each source of information is saying different things and maybe even telling different stories. So, as an example, I was watching this documentary the other day about how women fall in love. And in this documentary, there was a woman who was talking about her sister. And her sister had a friend who met this one guy in a park while walking her dog. And she said that she can feel really turned on anytime she hears this guy's voice. And when he talks, it's like you can imagine yourself kissing this person. So when you listen to that example, did you notice how hard it was to follow exactly who was saying what and when they were saying it? This is because each reality is overlapping one another, and because of that, it makes it pretty hard to follow. And because of that, you can easily occupy the conscious mind. And as you know by now, when we occupy the conscious mind, we can easily bypass someone's critical factor and speak directly to a person's subconscious. Okay, so the next tool I want to introduce you to is called time distortion. Now, this is one of the most powerful tools I can give you, because sometimes you might find that some people are still resisting your influence, no matter how influential you are. And it happens to all of us, because obviously people never want to be manipulated, or feel like they are at least, because if they do, then they're going to end up resisting you. So rather than trying to break through that resistance, the better thing is to go either before or after it. So when this happens, what you need to do is distort a person's sense of time and make them feel like they've already done what it is you want them to do. So if someone is resisting your influence, the best thing you can do is to go after that initial resistance. And I know this all sounds quite complex, but when you imagine a time in the future, say 6 months from now, and you've already mastered these techniques in this course, you're going to look back on learning this stuff as being one of the best things that's ever happened to you. And you'll realize that by listening to these audios right now, this was just the start of it. Now, when you think about it just like that, doesn't it seem like something you know you can achieve? So that's it. That was time distortion. I took you to a place in the future in your mind where you've already been using these techniques for 6 months and you've already mastered them and you've seen the difference that it's made to your life. And you can use that same technique on anyone that you feel you need to. And the way you can overcome a person's resistance is by making them imagine already having done what it is you want them to do. And then there's no reason why they can't just go ahead and do it right now. Alright, so next up I want to talk to you about a technique called presuppositions. Presuppositions are one of my favorite techniques for bending someone's mind around to my way of thinking and then making them think that that's what they wanted all along. And I've already mentioned them briefly, but I wanted to give you more of an idea about what they're all about. So presuppositions are by far the most effective way to help someone make a decision, or rather make a decision for them, by making a person think that something has already been agreed upon whereas in fact, most of the time it hasn't. And the reason a presupposition is so powerful is because of the way the language is structured. And it's structured in a way where it's automatically presumed that what you're saying is true. So as an example, you could say, just let me call my assistant in here before you sign the contract. So in that example, you're presupposing that he will sign the contract. Or another example could be, before we go to the restaurant, let's go for a quick drink. So in that last one, you're presupposing that you will be going to the restaurant. And you should use these presuppositions whenever you can because they're really powerful. But as well as that, another sneaky technique that you can use that's along the same lines as presuppositions is called the double bind. And the thing that's really cool about the double bind is that it actually gives the person the illusion of having two options, whereas in fact, the only option is yes or yes. So as an example, if you want your son to go to bed early, you could say, would you like to go to bed tonight at 8 or 8:15? And by giving those two options, it makes it seem like the child has a choice and they will have no problem choosing one of the options. So can you see how this works? You either get what you want and your child goes to bed, or you get what you want and your child goes to bed. So it's a win-win situation for you. And at the same time, you've created the illusion of free will and you're also still controlling the outcome. Another example could be in a business situation and you want to set up a meeting for lunch. So what you need to do is say, would you like to schedule the meeting for lunch on Tuesday at 1 or Wednesday at 12? So first of all, it's presupposed that they will choose one of the options, and either way, no matter which one they choose, you still get your desired result, which is a meeting for lunch. So again, it's a win-win situation for you. Okay, so now I want to tell you about how we can take all of the tools that we've talked about over the last hour and how we can put them together and use them to control and to influence people over the phone and through email. So first of all, I want to take you back to the idea of embedded commands. And remember when we talked about analog marking? Well, that's the main thing you need to be aware of when talking on the phone and writing emails with the intention of influencing someone. So when it comes to using embedded commands over the phone, you just need to mark out the words which are your embedded commands. Now, first of all, you can use analog marking in the same way that you would if you were talking to a person face-to-face by slightly pausing before the embedded command. And you can also use the same anchoring technique I told you about in the anchoring section of this audio when I talked about Mike and the VIP party. Or you can use anchoring in the same way when talking over the phone, just as long as the person on the other end of the phone can hear it. So let's say you're talking on the phone and you're building someone's state, and you can use that technique of drumming your fingers on a bottle or a glass held closely to the phone, or you can even tap on the phone itself if you want to. You can also use most of the other techniques we've talked about over the phone, such as states of mind, time distortion, quotes, and stacking realities, and also presuppositions and trance words. Okay, so that's how to use these techniques over the phone. Now, when it comes to email, this is where we get a little bit sneaky. When it comes to writing your email, what you need to do is make the font size of your embedded command slightly larger. So let's say your email font size is 12, then you'd want to use a font size of 13 for your embedded commands. Another thing you can do is use a slightly different color of text for your embedded commands. So let's assume the color of your email text is black, then you'd use a slightly lighter shade, which would be a very dark gray. So the point is, you just need to do whatever you can to mark off the words. And again, you can use a lot of the tools we've talked about in this audio in your email. So for example, you could use time distortion and presuppositions. And if you check your downloadable PDF workbook that's included with this section of the course, I've given you an example of a cover letter which shows you how to use the embedded commands into your emails or into any letters that you're sending. Okay, so that's how to use these techniques over the phone and in emails. But what about using them in real life situations? So let's say you've got an interview with a company that you've always wanted to work for. Now, instead of worrying which color shirt you should be wearing, you should be asking yourself the more important question of, if I could create any state of mind in this person conducting the interview today, then what states would I want them to experience? So maybe you'd want them to experience fascination, trust, intrigue, or attraction if it's a member of the opposite sex. So imagine you could create these states in this person doing the interview. How differently do you think the interview would go for you? Well, I'm willing to bet that it would go pretty differently to all of the other job interviews you've been to in the past. In fact, when you go to a job interview and you can get the person feeling states like fascination, trust, lust, and attraction, then don't be surprised if you're offered the job right there on the spot. So let's say you walk in there and you shake hands and you introduce yourself. And then after the usual questions, you get your turn to speak. So you could say something like, "You know, one of the things that I realized coming here today was that you're going to have a lot of people who are coming in for the job. And some of them are going to have these amazing resumes. But one of the things that I know is that you want to hire a person that's going to contribute something to the company. I mean, what's the main thing you're looking for, right? You want to work with someone who is creative, fun, dependable, and enthusiastic. I mean, have you ever had an employee like that? Someone who you know you want to work with as soon as you meet them? I mean, I know today and tomorrow you'll be meeting a lot of people who walk through the door, and maybe you've already made the decision that they're not right for the company. But then there's the other type of person. And when you meet them, you just know that you're going to get on really well with this person, like with me." I think that's one of the most important things to find when you're hiring a person. Now, that was just a quick example, but I just wanted to give you an idea of how you should be structuring your language to get the desired result that you want. So right there, you heard me use the embedded commands: want to hire this person, work with someone you know you want to work with. You just know that you're going to get on really well with this person, like with me. So as well as that, I want to give you one final example that you can use to get out of paying for parking tickets. But before I let you in on this, one thing that I will say is that this is bad, and I do not advise you to go around not paying for parking tickets. You should always pay for things, okay? This is just for entertainment purposes only. Okay, so let's say you're heading back to your car and you see a very nice man is about to issue you with a parking ticket, and then you realize you have no money. So the first thing you want to do is a verbal pattern interrupt, which is something you know how to do by now. So by doing a verbal pattern interrupt, what you're doing is, again, you're shifting his balance and you're getting this guy out of his usual pattern of behavior, because right now he's following his typical behavioral pattern of walking from one car to the next and issuing a ticket if he needs to. So you want him to be a little bit off balance. So you approach him, you say hi, you do a verbal pattern interrupt by saying, "No problem, I do apologize, entirely my fault. You clearly have a job to do and I should have been more careful and I should learn to shake my hand." Now that last bit of the sentence you need to say quickly as if it's something completely normal, as you extend your hand as if you're about to shake his. Now, this won't make any sense to him, so you'll put him in that confusion state, and he will extend his hand to meet yours. Then, as he goes to shake your hand, you say to him, "I met your dad yesterday, he's looking well." And then this will send him even further into that confusion state. Then within a second, you want to do the handshake induction, and you know how to do this by now, so you take his hand with your left hand, bring his hand up to his face, point to his palm with your finger while saying, "Look at your hand." And then again, you need to continue pacing, leading him into a trance by saying, as your hand moves closer to your face, and then slowly move the hand closer to his face while still pointing at it, you can say, "Just notice how your eyes change focus. And as you do that, you can let your eyes close. That's right. Just start to relax. Just sink right the way down, right the way deep, right the way sound asleep." And as you continue to drift even deeper and just sink right the way down, right the way deep, right the way sound asleep, just right the way down, right the way deep, just drifting, sinking, floating. That's perfect. Take all the time you need to do this. Right the way down, right the way deep. Now you can still hear and understand everything that I'm saying. That's really important. But what this will allow you to do is just do this perfectly as you stay right there with my voice in the center of your head and floating all the way around you. As you sink right the way down, right the way deep. And as we do this, just carry on drifting, and I'll explain what we're going to do as you drift and sink all the way down into a nice relaxed sleep. Right now I'm going to ask you to give me that ticket you're holding in your hand. And you're just going to give it to me. So give me the ticket. That's right. Just hand me the ticket and just really enjoy doing that. And as you continue to listen to my voice, and you're just going to go deeper into that trance, just right the way down, right the way deep, just drifting, sinking, floating. And all the things that have happened in the last few minutes just simply didn't happen. They will feel like they never happened. And it will be like a glitch in time, almost like daydreaming, or when you have a dream. And you can have a dream that's really exciting, and all sorts of things happen. And when you wake up, you just simply can't remember it. And that's how this will be. I'm going to drive off now, and after a few minutes, you can just wake up, and it will be like waking up out of a dream, and then you can continue with your day feeling quite refreshed. So that's all you need to do. And as I always say, this is an example that I've given you, and it's exactly that. It's an example. You do not have to memorize these things word for word. So if you've done everything right, he will be in a nice trance at this point, and you can just drive off. But you need to do this with full confidence and believe that it's going to work, and it will work. If you do anything with enough confidence, then it will work. So practice using the Empire Man to give yourself that confidence, and you'll be fine. Okay, so now to the frequently asked questions section. So the first question, do I have to use the scripts you've given me word for word? The answer to that is no, you don't. Any example that I've given you is exactly that. It's an example, and you don't have to use those exact words. In fact, once you understand how to construct your own scripts, I actually encourage you not to use the ones I've given you, because they are my words. So you want it to sound natural, so I suggest that you use words which suit you and the way that you naturally speak. Question number two, can I use the scripts word for word if I want to as I'm learning? Yes, definitely. As you're learning, I find that a lot of times it's useful for people to memorize the scripts so that they can just let them roll off the tongue whenever they need to use them. Question three, what if I get caught when using this kind of language? Well, first of all, it's very unlikely that you'd be caught because, as I keep saying throughout this course, 99% of people have no idea about these kind of techniques, and it's just so outside of their reality that you could influence a person through hypnotic language. And also, if you ever do get caught, first of all, it's not a big deal, and you could just say, I was just messing around, but you caught me. Or you could use one of the confusion techniques and then put them into a trance by using the handshake induction and then give them amnesia so they have no idea what you've been doing anyway. Question number four. I've memorized all of the scripts that you've given us, but I haven't actually tried them on anyone yet. Where shall I start? Well, the answer to that question is you just need to get out there and stop thinking about learning these techniques as something that you will be doing to someone, and just start using it in all of your interactions in your everyday life. And that's when this becomes really powerful, when you can use it with everybody you meet. Then it becomes less about something you're doing, and instead it becomes more of a way of being. Question number five. What should I do if I'm too scared to actually try these techniques? Well, the answer to that question is, if you're too scared to even try what I'm teaching you, then you really need to listen to the thought patterns that you have running through your head, because they are definitely holding you back in your life. If you're too scared to get yourself out of your comfort zone and to actually try something which will improve your life and help you get the life that you want and the life that you deserve, then how can you hope to achieve anything worth fighting for? Well, the answer is you won't. So my advice is use the Empire Man technique, find your inner confidence, and take the steps to make these techniques work for you. Okay, so with that said, coming to the end of the audio, so I just want you to know that hypnosis is a passion of mine, and yes, have fun with it, but just understand the morals and the ethics are down to you, and find other ways of applying this in your life, because you can do good things with it, you can make people feel good, you can point it towards your own goals and your dreams, and understand that this is about real mind power. So please use this with caution and with respect for the other people that you're using it with. And your motivation for doing any of this stuff should ultimately be for the greater good. And if you use these techniques from the standpoint of wanting to help people with their benefit genuinely in mind, then this stuff will work for you like a champ. And I hope you enjoy it, and I definitely enjoyed making this audio for you.